We are back at it.
You expect to not get your teeth kicked in on your home field by Tulsa!
Champions of the Big 12.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, how are we doing on this Sunday afternoon? It's gorgeous outside.
Oh, man, it's great. Yeah, it's been a good weekend. It was freezing cold yesterday morning when I was out playing golf, but it was beautiful today. Got kiddo out to play in the dirt for a little while. I threw a ball against a wall. Are you a throw a ball against a wall kind of guy, Carson? Because I can throw a ball against a wall all day.
My girls have learned the art of wall ball, so we're very familiar with throwing the ball against the wall right now. Although we're doing it with like a volleyball. I like to play with like the tennis ball against the old garage door. That's how I grew up playing.
Yeah, it's tennis ball or racquetball all day. And but we've got some flower beds out front. My daughter goes out. She plays in the dirt. I throw the ball against the wall, bounce it off the concrete. I mean, we must have done that for an hour earlier. She'll take a 5-minute break from playing in the dirt, and we'll just throw the ball across the front yard and race to it to see who can get to it first. And she just gets worn out and exhausted and dirty. We rinse her off, put her down for a nap. Great day. Great Sunday.
Great Sunday. I changed the date as we were doing the intro. So it is March 6th. I was able to correct that. Colby usually, a little inside baseball here, Colby usually has to remind me to change the date on the rundown.
You changed the date and you got it wrong, brother. It's March 8th.
Oh, whoops.
Why did I get also, can I just point out for the audio listeners, Carson is wearing a Manchester United jersey today, which is easily the reddest and whitest thing that has ever been worn on this podcast.
That's true. We don't wear a lot of red around here for obvious reasons. But hey, I was on my friend Tyler Vaughn's Manchester United podcast, the MUFC OKC guys. They watch all the Man U games down there at Skinny Slim. So shout out to Tyler, Alan Langston as well. Alan Langston's a big listener of the show. In fact, he actually grew up in Florida and loved Florida State, and he loved the Orlando Magic with Shaq. So we have a lot of like fandom in common, and he actually knew Kyle Porter a little bit too. So we go a lot of mutual connections there. So it was fun to talk some Manchester United soccer. I don't get to do that much on here. Haven't wanted to, frankly, for several years because they've been so down in the dumps lately. But yeah, that's why I'm wearing this for all of our YouTube watchers. You're probably wondering what the hell is he wearing red for. So that's why. If you want to wear Oklahoma State apparel, you know where to go. Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. Be sure to shop at chrisuniversityspirit.com. We appreciate them sponsoring the podcast as always. I'm sure Eric Morris has stopped by a few times. He's wearing the latest, greatest OSU apparel, and you can too. Go to Chris's right there on Campus Corner, right there over by Hideaway Pizza. You know where to go. Chris's longtime sponsor of the program. And speaking of which, we have a lot to talk about, Colby, and it's that time of year where no matter what we talk about, someone's going to be mad at us because we didn't talk about the sport they wanted us to talk about. I think we had a few comments. We didn't talk about women's basketball last show or OSU baseball. We get this every year. It's like a rite of passage as we get into spring, Colby, but we have a lot to discuss with wrestling. We will talk some Cowgirls hoops. Eric Morris as well, but just there's too much going on in there, Colby. Like we can't even talk about all of it.
Yeah, and having a new football coach and having him do interviews and give quotes and things, talk about Mestemaker, and it just adds to it. In addition to the fact we've got both basketball schools getting into conference tournaments and NCAA play for the women, we've got wrestling, baseball, softball. There's a lot going on. Golf. We will get to all of it throughout the spring. If we don't get to something on an individual show, just be patient with us. There's a lot going on. It'll start winding down here in a couple of weeks whenever wrestling and basketball are finished. Then we'll have a little bit more space for some free-flowing spring sport conversations.
Yeah, that for sure. And look, the baseball season's rather lengthy, as is softball, so we'll have plenty of time to get into those sports as well. But I think first things first, we got to talk about Oklahoma State wrestling. They went back-to-back Big 12 championships. Jax Forrest named most outstanding wrestler, just absolutely dominant performance from him. Just there's a lot to break down with the wrestling team, Colby, in terms of the individuals and all the performances we were able to see this weekend. And the fact there was a tornado warning, they had tornadoes coming down near Tulsa where they were wrestling. So a lot to break down, Colby. But for me, the number one thing that stands out is just on it. You keep saying Jax Force is different, and that's just like kind of the best way to put it. I've been meaning to text one of my friends I grew up with that was a wrestler, really was on the same wrestling team as Johnny Hendricks in high school. Johnny went to my school at Memorial. Shout out to the Bulldogs. I've been meaning to reach out to him just to help me understand how this kid can be just on a completely different level than every other wrestler at his weight in college, because he makes Colby top 10 guys look like they don't even belong on the same mat. I mean, he texts the guy in the finals. He just texts everyone he sees. It's just, it's kind of shocking to watch that this guy came in mid-semester or mid-year at the spring semester and has just mopped the floor with everyone and now has his sights set on an individual national championship after winning a Big 12 championship. It's crazy to watch, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Tex all the way through the bracket, major decision in the finals. He almost had a takedown with like 25 seconds left for the Tech fall. But I sat there and I watched, I don't know, 3 hours of wrestling last night, watched it start to finish. Oklahoma State had a finalist in almost every weight class. And every single final, you watched two pretty evenly matched wrestlers come out and just battle for every point. Not a lot of scoring, some low scoring matches, some 5-4s, 4-3s, 1-1s going into double overtime. And it was just, it was so hard for anybody to get a leg up on their opponent all night long. It was just evenly matched. Who's going to get that one extra point? The riding time, the escape, whatever it is, the reversal. And then Jax Forrest in the ninth bout of the night takes the mat. And Carson, it was, I mean, tornadoes hit Tulsa on Friday night, and then a tornado hit Tulsa on Saturday night, and his name was Jax Forrest, and he came out, and it was just, it was an F5, Carson. It was not competitive, and the kid from Arizona State was 18-0 this year. He was 18-1, technically, but his one loss was a medical forfeit. He was 18-0. I mean, he's one of the best wrestlers in the country at that weight class, and Jax Forrest just made him look, I mean, he looked exhausted halfway through the first period, trying to defend Jax Forrest, just getting in between his legs and getting up top and flipping it. It was, I mean, I was watching it with my wife and she's sitting there and she's like, oh my God. She's like, why is this one so different? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what's so different. The way he moves, the way he defends, like you can't get in between him. You can't get him off balance. If you think you have something, he slips it and he's right back underneath you. It's just, he's unbelievable, Carson. I couldn't believe how evenly matched every single match was last night. And then Jax just came out and looked like he was on a different planet from everybody else in the arena. He was obviously the most impressive wrestler of the tournament. He faced zero real competition in that match. His only real competition this year was the I believe it was a 10-9 win at Virginia Tech, which really convinced him and the coaching staff, okay, even I don't have a good day, I'm on the road, I still get the win. Like, yeah, he's built for it, and his sights are set on a national championship. I'm sure he'll have some serious contenders up there, and I believe it's in Cleveland. But I don't know, man. If he loses, tip of the cap to whoever beats him, because he is just making quick work of everybody who steps on the mat with him.
Yeah, and I think I saw a lot of his competition at his weight, I think, lost in some of their postseason. I think Blaze from Purdue. I saw a couple other guys at his weight class didn't win their individual conference championship. So those guys are kind of trending a little in the more negative direction. And Jax just seems to be ascending even more than he already was before. And it's just, it's unbelievable. And it's Oklahoma State's 57th conference title. They had 176 team points, which is a half point shy of the conference's record, which OSU set in 2017. David Taylor becomes the second Big 12 coach to win team titles in his first two seasons as a head coach, joining Cale Sanderson, who won three in a row at Iowa State his first 3 years. So that's those two guys, Colby, are going to be compared for many, many years, and that's just another kind of notch for David Taylor, kind of following in Cale Sanderson's footsteps, coming from, you know, Penn State. And then Cale Sanderson obviously went on to coach him at Penn State. But Jax Forrest just – he should absolutely win an individual national championship. Obviously, it won't be that easy. He's not going to tech everybody in the national tournament. But we kind of expected him to go ahead and win a Big 12 title, and he did. And Sergio Vega, just he has a flair for the dramatics, doesn't he? He wins an individual Big 12 championship, and just in true Vega style, it was kind of just a very dramatic win. And he will enter his first NCAA championship unbeaten, and he hasn't been taken down all year. So I think Vega and Forrest are two just prime candidates to win a national title this year for Oklahoma State. Really, really exciting young wrestlers, really kind of ushering in the David Taylor era right before our eyes.
Yeah, I had not seen that stat that Vega has not been taken down all season. That's unbelievable. It was interesting last night because Casey Swiderski got things started off. I don't know how they decide what order the weight classes go in. To me, it would make a ton of sense to just start at 125 and then work your way up through heavyweight. It's not how they did it. They started at 149, worked their way up through heavyweight, came back to 125, and then they did 125, 133, and 141. So Vega capped the night off. So Casey Swiderski led things off for Oklahoma State, and he goes out, he gets the win. It's his first Big 12 championship. It's awesome. And then, I mean, you have to sit around for an hour and a half, 2 hours to watch another Oklahoma State wrestler win a Big 12 championship. Landon Robidoux, tough, hard-fought match. He comes in second. D. Lockett, I believe his match went to overtime, maybe double overtime. He comes in second. Facundo, he gets near-falled early in that match. Can't make up for that. He comes in second. Connor Doucette at heavyweight. He comes in second. And it's like, good grief, this is a lot of seconds that we're putting out there. And then the three smaller guys, 125, 133, and 141, all came through. And Vega, just the way that match ended, it came down to riding time in double overtime. They went through the sudden death, no points. So they each get to start on top in double overtime. And I think the kid he was wrestling stayed on top for like 18 seconds. So Vega had to stay on top for more than 18 seconds in that second overtime. And the other kid never got up. He never got up. Vega stayed on top of him for about 14 seconds until they were out of the circle. And then they got back in, and he stayed on him for another 16 seconds to win the Big 12 championship. And it was just it was theater. It was the last match of the night. Jax had just gone, and it was a just steamroll, and then Vega comes out there in what was maybe the most exciting ending to a match all night from an Oklahoma State perspective, just because it's like, man, he and earlier in that match, maybe the second or third period, the other kid had gotten up quick on an escape, like within 5 seconds, and he's got to ride him for 19 seconds, and he rode him out for 30. So it was beautiful stuff from Vega, and it was a great cap to the night after having that 6-match stretch there in the middle where Oklahoma State didn't have an individual champion to go back-to-back-to-back to close out the night and give that home crowd in Tulsa something to feel really good about.
Yeah, I mean, I think they flip – I say they flip a coin to what weight they're going to start. Obviously, there's not a 10-sided coin, but you know what I mean. I think they start at random. That's how they do that with the weight classes.
Okay.
I'm like you. I think they should always just start at 125 and finish with the heavyweights. That's just always been the cleanest way to do it. And that's how they typically do, you know, like home duels, things like that. But that's kind of what they've done in the past. So, no, I mean, that kind of was interesting how the way it looked, you know, the way they – what weight classes they started at. It was kind of a rough start there. And I think David Taylor probably wasn't thrilled with how it played out. But, hey, you win a Big 12 championship. You get everybody – unscathed for the most part in terms of health. I think that's the biggest deal in the Big 12 is win the conference championship, get everybody out of there without a major injury. And there were some disappointments in there. I think Cody Merrill had some controversy where the guy kind of grabbed his headgear and they didn't call it. And there was some other controversial things that occurred throughout the matches. But overall, I mean, OSU's primed to make a deep run here. Probably have their best finish in 4, 5, 6 years, probably. Long way to go before they challenge Penn State, obviously, but a really good showing up in Tulsa. And really, OSU wrestling is back to where they belong in terms of dominating the conference and having a lot of guys with a chance to All-American, much less win national championships. That's kind of where Oklahoma State wrestling needs to be, and they're back. And I think it's been overall, a tremendous year two for Oklahoma State wrestling. And Colby, how would you kind of put a bow on it now that we go to nationals? For me, it's pretty simple that you can see the startings and the makings of something really special here with David Taylor. Cale Sanderson, it took him several years before he had this juggernaut of a program where every single weight class can All-American. But you look at the recruiting that David Taylor's done, you look at the support he's garnered there, and you look at the young studs he already has, like a Jax Forrest and a Vega, and the guys that he has, you know, kind of waiting in the wings. It's really exciting. And I think just overall, I think you can start to see the building of something beyond just getting OSU back in the national landscape, but maybe the startings of something like great and greatness that we've seen. Maybe not to the Cale Sanderson level yet, but certainly John Smith, where they are every year one or two as far as best teams to win a national or teams with best chances to win a national championship.
Yeah, and I mean, if David Taylor spends the next 15 or 20 years in Stillwater, does anybody think that that's not going to be the case? Like with the start that he's gotten off to, with the way that he's recruiting, I understand Penn State has just an unbelievable dynasty going up there, but I think young people want to be a part of what's happening in Stillwater, and I think it very much could become Penn State obviously has created a gap from themselves to the rest of the field. But is it unthinkable to think that in 2, 3, 4 years that it could just be Penn State and Oklahoma State here, and that gap still exists, but now it's a gap between 1 and 2 and everybody else instead of just a gap between 1 and everybody else? I think if David Taylor sticks around and is in Stillwater for a long time, that's completely reasonable. And just the different feel that this season has had since Jax Forrest came on. I mean, Carson, he should be worrying about who he's going to ask to prom right now. And instead, he's on his way to Cleveland to go win a national championship. Like, it's just he's different. So I think the excitement level that has injected into the fan base, I think even in the team room, having somebody like that who comes in so young and is that dominant, I think everybody else looks and they're like, okay, I've got to do my job. He's going to do his job. He just got here. He's 18 years old. He's the kid. I'm going to go do my job. Wrestling's in a great place right now. I think everybody is pretty fired up. And I mean, Carson, it's March. It's March Madness. It's all that stuff. And wrestling has totally taken over all of the Oklahoma State headlines. Like, wrestling comes first on this show for the next couple of weeks, because it's the main thing in town right now. And it won't be this week. It'll be next week. So Thursday, March 19th is when the national championship starts. Session 1 is on that Thursday in Cleveland. And then the final session 6, will be that Saturday night, March 21st in Cleveland. So, I'm excited, man. It was fun last year to watch Wyatt. And I can't wait to watch Jax this year, to watch Vega, D. Lockett, these other guys that are going up there. Hopefully Oklahoma State can come up with a handful of individual national champions.
Yep, hopefully so. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I wish they were closer. You know, sometimes they've been, in Texas, or they even used to have the Nationals in Oklahoma City occasionally. I wish it was a lot closer. I would really try to go if it was, you know, a drivable distance, because I didn't get to make it up there for a duel up in Calgary-Iowa Arena, which was just spectacular. It'll be a lot of fun to watch on TV. And ESPN does a very good job, I feel like, of covering it. They give it a lot of airtime. And I think that's important for the sport as well. But unfortunately, it wasn't all positive. So Oklahoma State Cowgirls basketball were the 4 seed in the Big 12 tournament, going up against the 12-seeded Kentucky Wildcats, Kansas State Wildcats. And it ends in controversy, Colby. So if you didn't watch the game, it's a tie game. K-State hits a layup to tie the ball game. Oklahoma State tied it up, and K-State's dribbling the ball up the court, essentially, with tie game. They call Staley Hurd for a reach-in foul with 1.3 seconds left, about 70 feet from the basket. She reached in, but she didn't hit the player's arm. It wasn't an obvious foul, and they blow the whistle, and as you can imagine, J.C. Hoyt lost her mind, couldn't believe they would call that. She said, quote, after the game, of course, K-State hit the free throws to win. J.C. Hoyt said afterwards, I'm incredibly disappointed and embarrassed for the way that game ended. To make that call in a game like that, you don't do that. It should not have come down to that call. It wasn't called the entire game until that last play. And I've got a locker room full of kids that are really, really hurting right now, and they didn't get to decide the outcome of the game. Someone else did, and that is not right. So, whew! Colby, just the infinite sadness has leaked over from the men to the women. Just a horrific way to lose a basketball game.
Yeah, and good for Coach Hoyt for coming out and just being just straightforward about what happened. The players on the court didn't decide the game. The person with the whistle did. I don't know what happens sometimes where these officials make a call like that. Like, you just put yourself right in the middle of the action and you totally undo an entire basketball game with one blow of the whistle. I mean, even if you just, it's an instinct, tell everybody it was an inadvertent whistle. Let's call this thing off. I'm sure people on the Kansas State side are saying, well, she shouldn't have even been close to her that far from the back. Like, whatever. The game doesn't end on that. Human beings are flawed. Human beings officiate these games. Human beings make mistakes. But sometimes there are just errors at the end of games that decide the outcome, quite literally decide the outcome. And errors that just can't be made. It's the Central Michigan error is another example. It's just human error. That's all it is. Human beings are flawed. Human beings made that decision. But that's an error that can't be made in that moment. Same thing here with the women. I just, you feel awful for them. It ends their Big 12 championship run. They will make the NCAA tournament. They'll get to play more basketball. But, yeah, pretty brutal. And I'm glad that Coach Hoyt came out and said that. And I'd be curious, you know, it's not like the NBA where we get a last 2-minute report or we get a pool report with the lead official. But gosh, I'd love to hear from that official and have that official sit down and watch the replay and understand that the game was decided on that call, and then hear from that official in terms of like, what do you think now? Like, watching that back, what do you think now? Do you think you were justified in deciding that basketball game in that moment? It was just a true, true gut punch.
And look, the last thing I think college basketball, both men and women, needs is more stoppages of play, more reviews, things of that nature. But I will say, in the final 2 minutes on a call like that, I wonder if they need to instill some sort of a challenge like the NBA, where you get one challenge per half. And that's how it works, because J.C. Hoyt said after the game in a follow-up question, quote, I have seen a replay and there was no foul. If anything, I think it was a travel after we reached in and got all ball. But regardless, you don't blow the whistle in that case. That call wasn't made the entire game and you just do not make that call. So no, I don't believe it was a foul. I think anyone who watches the replay can see that. To your point, Colby, like, you know, a game-deciding call with a second left on the clock, I sure wish coaches had a chance to challenge that rather than it just, oh, that's the breaks of the game. Like, that to me, I think is, I don't think it should be like college football where they review every single little call that might need to be, have another looked at, where it slows the game down entirely, but give the coaches one challenge and go from there. I think that would be a good solution for basketball.
Yeah, like you said, the NBA has it right. They get one challenge for the game. If they are successful on that first challenge, they get another one. After that, you're done. You know, you're just, if you use two challenges early in the game, you're cooked if they make a bad call in the fourth quarter. But that's why coaches budget their challenges and use them very wisely so that there aren't tons of stoppages constantly slowing down the game with official reviews or anything like that. Yeah, there has to be some way to prevent that from happening. Replay exists to correct the human error that we're talking about. And there just was no opportunity for that for the Oklahoma State women that late in the game. And yeah, I'm sure that locker room was not only just sadness to have your tournament in that way, I imagine they were very angry. Like, the anger that you feel when someone takes a win away from you like that, that's different than just the normal disappointment of a loss. Like, there's real anger in that. And who knows, maybe it fuels them to go on a run next week. But for now, for today, it hurts, it stings. And gosh, it feels like one of these basketball programs just needs to catch a break, Carson.
They need some solutions. And if you need a solution, turn to Wolf Corporation, an Oklahoma-based commercial real estate brokerage that has been serving the local community since 2010. They have built their business on the foundation of understanding that each client has unique needs, goals, and preferences. They offer commercial brokerage solutions. They connect clients with the most relevant commercial property listings and provide timely, actionable opportunities. Reach out to them at wolfcorporation.com. That's W-U-L-F corporation.com, or call them at 405-308-3480 today. They're proudly ran by Oklahoma State alumni. Go Pokes. Appreciate Wolf Corporation sponsoring the show as always. Men's hoops, the infinite sadness continues. They put up a good fight against Kelvin Sampson and the Houston Cougs, but they did fall to Houston. But it just really kind of, Colby, a glimpse of, you know, they have some pieces. They can compete with some of the better teams in the Big 12. They've done so. And we're not able to win this game, but you know, another good showing to where I think it kind of speaks to what Parsifal said after the game that he got injured in was, you know, kind of stick with Steve Lutz. He's making progress, and look, it's a loss. You don't celebrate losses, but you can stomach this a lot better than getting drummed by 30, 35 points where it's not competitive throughout. So I will say they haven't given up, and Steve Lutz is certainly showing that he knows how to coach this team. He knows how to get them in the right spots, and they have talent. It's just for whatever reason, this season's been a bit of a dud. But I think most of the game was known for Parsifal's last time in Gallagher Iba Arena. He participated in Senior Day, and he left his cowboy hat at the center of the court, really just kind of furthering his position as a fan favorite, right? I mean, just a really special way for him, a guy that whose season was taken from him, much like the game was taken from the Cowgirls, just this time due to injury. So that's kind of what the game was most known for, was Parsifal's sending off.
Yeah, no doubt. It was awesome to see Parse out there, and he just he loves Stillwater, man. He loves being a Cowboy. Clearly means a lot to him, and you love to see that from the guys. As far as the game goes, it was a good game. Benjamin Ahmed picks up that offensive foul, gets teched on the following possession. That was a big swing point in the game. Like you said, I appreciate that this team hasn't quit, because I was pretty close a couple of weeks ago to making the accusation that maybe they had quit. What was it, 4 or 5 games in a row there they lost, and a couple of those pretty non-competitive. And then they have found ways to battle, to stick around. They've got some talent. They haven't been able to get it done on the defensive end mostly, and Houston was just too good in the end. But I appreciate that they're still battling. It was not the season that we hoped for, Carson, especially after the way the season started. Like, this team, they looked good in November and December. They looked really good. That OU game was a dud, but, you know, we excused it away. Parsa was hurt, right? Parsa was hurt, so we made the excuse. I felt good about this being a tournament team based on what we'd seen earlier in the season. I think you did too, and it just kind of all ended up being a dud. I appreciate that they're still fighting. I appreciate that the Cowboy spirit is there with Parsa leading the way on that. His words on Steve Lutz last week were good. They haven't lost any commits. The recruiting class is still there. So you can't give a guy 2 years and then run him off. You've got to be patient and hope that the results come. So that's all we can do at this point. But, yeah, any tournament hopes, I mean, they're what, the 14 seed in the Big 12 tournament? And their tournament chances now hinge on winning the Big 12 conference tournament, which, Carson, don't know about you, don't love their chances. Pretty loaded conference. With some guys being paid serious money to play basketball. Do you see what AJ DeBanza is being paid to play basketball this year by the Utah Jazz owner?
No.
Seven.
What?
$7 million.
Wait, so the Utah Jazz owner is fronting that? He's a BYU alum, I take it?
Correct. I assume he's a BYU alum. My understanding is that the Utah... But... I will preface this by saying the classic Michael Scott, my understanding. But my understanding from what I've read is that the Utah Jazz owner is a major BYU basketball donor.
Like, and $7 million?
$7 million, man. You can
pay more than Bill Self.
It is what it is. It is what it is.
Stupid. AJ DeBanza, like, what are we doing?
AJ DeBanza is very, very good. And BYU has another very, very good player coming in the next recruiting class that I'm sure is also getting a big fat NIL contract.
Like, what are we doing? This is stupid. Like, this is just dumb. This isn't even remotely college athletics. And it's not even the same thing anymore. This is just dumb. This is like Ice Cube's league, basically. Pay this guy to come in here. Who cares? Doesn't matter.
When we all said, hey, the players deserve a piece of the pie, we didn't just mean have billionaires just forked money out of their pockets to get players to come to their school. That's not what anybody meant. We all meant the conferences and the universities and the coaches are all making so much money off these TV contracts. What if a little bit of that trickled down to the guys who are playing the sport? And instead, we are just raiding billionaires' bank accounts so that AJ DeBanza can go to Provo.
Yeah, and just be one and done, too. They gotta fix the one and done rule, too, on top of everything else that's wrong. But you mentioned it, Oklahoma State, 14 seed. They're going to play Colorado, who's the 11 seed, 8:30 Tuesday night. But I will say, Oklahoma State, they're 18-12, 6-12 in Big 12 play. That's an improvement on last year when they went 17-18. So if you're looking at the glass, if you're looking at this Dr. Pepper half full, this feels half full to me, not half empty, because that is an improvement on last year. I think perhaps if these new recruits, this top five recruiting class comes in next year, maybe we'll look back at what we view right now as a disappointing season, and maybe we'll look at it as a positive step in the right direction as this program gets turned around. So to me, Colby, this Dr. Pepper's half full on that front.
I like it. I like your optimism. Hopefully this is a building block for Steve Lutz and not a roadblock for Steve Lutz. Because, again, the recruiting class is there. They've got three high-level recruits coming in, and that can turn a program around, especially in basketball. You get three guys on a football team, doesn't make quite the impact because you're having to play 40, 50 guys every week. You get three guys coming in on a basketball team, that can totally change your fortune. So hopefully all three of those guys stick around, and hopefully we see that impact early as freshmen. As we've seen all across the country, freshmen are having a bigger impact than ever in college basketball.
Yep, no doubt. Eric Morris making the rounds nationally. He's kind of appeared on a lot of podcasts. He went on Andy Staples' podcast, went on David Pollock's podcast. I think you sent me a clip of that too, Colby. And really, I think it's kind of refreshing to see a coach this front and center nationally. Like, I think Mike Gundy, he mostly, once he got into spring, you just didn't see or hear from him until, I think, the spring game, essentially. He kind of just did his own thing. And I don't envy being a college football coach, the year-round recruiting and all those things. I'm not even blaming Mike Gundy. It's just, it's interesting that Eric Morris clearly wants to get his name out there, clearly wants to get the logo out there. And he's making the rounds, and I think the number one takeaway I think I had from some of his appearances is he talks about building relationships over and over and over. And that, to me, is a stark contrast to Mike. Mike, we all know, was very secluded, did his own thing, and had a lot of success. But Eric Morris is way more out there with alumni, former players, boosters, recruits. Like, he is everywhere seemingly all at once, including these national shows. What were kind of your takeaways from his appearances this week?
So along those lines, I didn't get to listen to the conversation with Staples, but I listened to the conversation with Pollock. And one of the things he said that really stood out to me is that his staff, all of their families are welcome at all times. And he elaborated on that. And he said, you know, you get these coaches out there, and sometimes you get these hot days in the summer, and you've got a coach, he's ripping you a new one because you didn't do what needed to be done. And sometimes you're coaching guys hard out there. And I think it's important, this is Coach Morris, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, I think it's important for those guys to see that same coach have their child run up to him, and they pick their child up and they give him a big hug, and they get to see him be a strong father and see the love there with the coaches and their families. And I just think the duality of people to be able to understand that your coach is doing this because he wants you to be better and that your coach loves you. I just think that Eric Morris really gets the relationship side of it. So that was one takeaway I had. Another one, and I sent you a short clip. He was talking about the money with David Pollock, and he basically said, look, that's not my job. I don't deal with the money. Raj deals with the money. He talked about Raj, 24 years old, phenom, all this stuff. He jokes. He's like, I don't know how to use Microsoft Excel. He's a wizard. I let him handle it.